Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. This was the week of broken dreams, shattered dreams, humiliation for the NBA second tier. I feel like the Raptors really took one pretty tough on Monday against the Cavaliers, and then, not to be outdone, the Clippers really took one tough against the Warriors on Wednesday. I was in attendance in person there. I'm still trying to bleach my eyeballs from it.
First of all, how do you feel about jinxing the Raptors and Clippers? I think like you're trying to apologize, but you're not really getting there yet.
No, I'm not trying to apologize. I'm trying to take credit. I mean,
you should be apologizing. I mean, look, the SI jinx has never been clearer than it was this week. That's all I'm saying.
Dude, I have been on an absolute roll because not only that, I have been in attendance the last three times that someone's consecutive three-pointer streak has been snapped. I snapped Kyle Korver's streak in Portland. Then I snapped Steph Curry's streak in LA against the Lakers. And I snapped JJ Redick's streak last night. So if
you're also the only person I know that tracks these streaks meticulously. So Congrats on that as well.
I'm just saying there's jinxes on jinxes on jinxes here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, last week we broke Mike Conley's back. So clearly we're pretty good at the jinxes. But we should start with the Warriors because this was a ridiculous. This might have been the most Warriors week that we've ever seen, really, between Draymond, Steve Kerr advocating for medical marijuana, Warriors, Clippers, take us through that game.
For sure. Well, first of all, I got my absolution on the Grizzlies thing. I went on Eric Hasseltine's show in Memphis, shout out to him, and he cleared me of any wrongdoing in the Mike Conley incident. So we're clear on that.
He cleared us.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So the game on Wednesday was very interesting. You know, I didn't totally know what to expect, but I thought given the way the Clippers bounced back after that Nets loss when they played the Cavaliers, I was expecting a solid bounce back because they had just lost to the Pacers in a game they really shouldn't have lost, right?
Right.
Instead, the game was over in basically the first 2.5 minutes. I mean, it was just done. The entire air was sucked out of the arena. I mean, as Kevin Durant astutely mentioned after the game, the crowd was a little late arriving. They quote unquote piled in a little late and basically didn't know what had happened. I mean, and the Warriors just kind of jumped them. It wasn't like the Warriors played an amazing opening stretch. Chris Paul gets the technical foul right off the bat. That starts making you kind of roll your eyes a little bit like, you know, this guy has been saying for the last couple of weeks, he's trying to do better with the officials, biggest game of the season. And he just loses it right off the bat. And then Blake Griffin was just completely locked down by Draymond Green. And I think it's kind of a situation where Blake loses all of his basketball ability every time he steps foot within about 10 feet of Draymond Green. I don't know if it's because of that tongue wagging incident a few years ago, if that's just completely hexed Griffin, but he's just not the same guy. 5 turnovers in the first quarter, and that was it. And they never really made a push. There was never really any life in the building. The Warriors were dancing all over the court. E40, the Bay Area rap legend, was on the baseline taking pictures and apparent Snapchats with the Warriors fans by their bench. You know, it didn't
How much of the crowd were Warriors fans?
Not as much as the peak at last year's, you know, kind of, you know, crazy Curry mania. But okay. I would say, you know, a decent 10 to 15%. But by the end of the game, I mean, that's who was left, right? So they're chanting Warriors and, you know, you've got all these celebrities who are there. Who clearly are interacting with guys like Iguodala and Durant, you know, not so much with the Clippers. And it was, I don't want to use the word humiliating lightly. I think it was a humiliating loss. And when you looked at their post-game comments, whether it was Doc, Blake, or Chris, and they went straight to the spirit talk, you know, the Warriors took our spirit. And it just sounded like a team that is so deep inside of its own heads when it comes to this quote unquote rivalry with the Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, it's just tough. And I don't know. I mean,
well, I had a couple of different reactions to it. First of all, big picture coming into the game, like go back a couple weeks when we were talking about the Clippers, even when we were praising them, it ended with us saying, well, like, that Warriors game could be pretty uncomfortable if they get blown out by 25. Like, this was always a possibility. So it wasn't terribly surprising that it happened this way. I think it would have been more surprising had it been a classic.
And I mean, it was a seventh win in a row for Golden State, right? So, like, there's a pattern here.
And we'll get to Golden State. As far as the game itself, like, coming in, I checked the line. It was Golden State by 4. And I kind of did a double take and was like, I think this might be the lowest Warrior spread we'll see all year. Cavs might be pretty low too. But I was like, I don't know what Vegas knows that I don't, but it was almost so obvious that I was like freaked out to bet on it. And then about 5 minutes into the game, I checked Twitter and saw that Doc had called out the Warriors beforehand and said that, you know, they've only won one title. And I was like, well, the Clippers are going to lose by 20 tonight because Doc couldn't help himself. And and then the other thing is like, the Blake stuff was crazy to watch. I don't just credit Draymond. Draymond was phenomenal in that game. You know, I was pretty critical earlier in this week, and that game was like everything that makes him a top 10 caliber player. Is like, he was phenomenal on offense, and defensively, he's probably the best defender in the league. However, Blake, that was like a classic case of him being like a little too wired in, don't you think?
He was just pressing. There's no question about it. But I also think that it's not just Draymond's physical strength or his knowledge of Blake's moves or his anticipation ability or his ability to challenge shots. I mean, all of the kinds of things you would want if you're trying to slow Blake down. I just think it's really mental between those two. And going back real quick to what you said about Doc's pregame comments, it's kind of like compulsive light shade.
It's compulsive passive aggressiveness.
It really is, because like, remember that quote that I had about the rivalry where he's like, it's not a rivalry, it's a drive-through rivalry. And then he's like, by the way, we've only played them once in the playoffs and we beat them, right? It's like he cannot help himself from these little digs. And as you said, the Warriors, that is their mana, right? I mean, that's what they live off of. And, you know, I'm sure they heard about it. I'm sure that got back pretty quickly. And, you know, needless to say, like, Mo Spates was singing kind of a different tune after the game, wasn't he?
And,
he's like, we need to be more like them.
I don't even know that the Warriors definitely heard about Doc's quote, but I just knew that the universe was not going to reward more bullshit from Doc Rivers on that night. And the other thing that I will say is that, like, the Clippers, the weird thing watching that game was that the Clippers were trying to play like the Warriors, like, except they were just a much more depressing version of the Warriors. Like, instead of KD taking threes, you had Blake Griffin like spotting up in the corner, which is not great. Instead of Klay Thompson, you had Austin Rivers. Like, I think the reason I and a lot of other people, we talked about how the Clippers could give this team a run for their money was because they could score inside on them. But the Warriors, whether it was Draymond, KD did a great job too. Like, those guys did a great job forcing the Clippers into a bunch of pull-up threes. And if that happens, like, it's not even going to be close.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Let's look at this from the Warriors' prism, right? Coming into season, I had a checklist for what I wanted to see the Warriors to do. Number one was acclimate Kevin Durant, get him comfortable. Well, that happened right out of the gate, right? The first couple games. Number
two, can I ask you something? Did you really have a checklist?
I did, absolutely. Well, let me say a mental checklist. Maybe it wasn't a notepad. Okay. Maybe it wasn't a notepad.txt checklist, but like, this is a legitimate mental checklist.
I gotcha.
Step two was, can they have the offense flow when Kevin Durant is involved? In other words, like, can you pull Steph Curry and Klay back into it, make sure there's enough touches for everybody to go around? They made that happen. So then the next question was, okay, well, they've got some questions inside defensively. Got, you know, Zaza, is that going to get fixed? Are they going to go small? Who's going to step up? Is Draymond and KD going to be enough inside, or do they have to go make a move and kind of address that position? Well, Draymond and KD have been playing great defense. They've kind of checked that off the list, right?
They've been phenomenal.
The next one was, okay, Andre Iguodala, like, he looks like slightly washed like the first couple weeks of the season. Like, is he going to get his game back together? Well, check that one off the list. Like, he looks great. He's going to be one of their top five guys to close against the Cavaliers. That's not going to be an issue. So basically every concern that I had about the Warriors, they've addressed. We're in the first week of December, and the only thing left for them to do is show that they can do it against Cleveland and that Kevin Durant can kind of get over the LeBron mental hump. If he can do that, I mean, these guys are absolutely rolling. Their offense is right where we thought it would be in terms of record-setting pace. They're moving the ball brilliantly, arguably at times even better than they did last season. I'm not really sure what more you can reasonably ask of these guys. I mean, of course, they're not going to lock in and go for 75, 77 wins or whatever, but I mean, they're at an A-plus clip.
Look, this week is it. Like this week was the sum of all Warriors fears, and we're only like 6 weeks into the season or whatever it is. I mean, it's crazy that it's clicked as quickly as it has. And I think coming into the year, again, you and I were talking, and like this is sort of what we expected. We expected it to click pretty quickly, and then the Spurs game gave us pause. And I mean, I still think that the Iguodala thing is a legitimate question. I still wonder about their interior defense to a degree, but they have answered a lot of questions. And it's also like the thing with them is a lot of their games start to feel like all-star games, like even against the Clippers, a really good team. Like they were kind of just doing whatever they wanted throughout the second half there. And then we should talk about Klay, because like that was completely absurd and definitely took on the feel of like an all-star game where they were just feeding him over and over again in the second half. Like, what'd you think of 60?
Some of the passes that they gave him in that 60 game were just ridiculously audacious. Like Steph, like no look, left-handed whipped passes through traffic with Klay like spotting up, but like not even necessarily in position yet. Like still like two steps away from where he was going to catch. I mean, it's borderline Globetrotters. I don't even know if All-Star is really strong enough.
Globetrotters definitely captures what it's like.
And just real quick on the Clippers game, I really do think that game said a lot more about the Warriors than it did about the Clippers. The Clippers, I think I'm going to be judging them based on their next six game stretch. I mean, they basically have six winnable games in a row. You know, if they don't go 4-2 or 5-1 on that stretch, then I'm going to start to get concerned. And I see other people out there kind of getting concerned about the Clippers. But judge them based off of the next six, not this one against the Warriors. And in terms of the Warriors though, and that Klay game, here's my question for you. Steve Kerr really stringently sticks to the old school coaching Bible, right? Like let him get to that round number of 60 and then pull him out immediately so you don't really embarrass him, the opposition. What if Luke Walton or one of these other, you know, younger new age coaches was the coach? I mean, are we going to be headed for like a post-sportsmanship reality here where at some point one of these younger coaches is going to be like, you know what? Klay, screw it. Go for it. We're going to leave you in for the first 6 minutes of the fourth, or we're not even going to care. We're just going to force the other team to defend you. Go ahead and play the entire fourth quarter and see what you can do.
So a lot of people had takes on whether or not Klay should have been taken out. My number one take on that was that it really did have like a Globetrotter feel in the second half. And that's fine. The Warriors are that good, so that a lot of their games are going to have that feel. But you don't want to make it too obvious. And I think if you had left him out there, like he could have gotten 80, but it would not have been fun to watch that, I guess. At least me personally, like I don't want to see them turn into like a sideshow. And so I was totally fine with him taking him out for that reason.
Okay, here's one of my extended...
That did not really answer your question, but still. Okay, I just wanted to get that take off.
Here's one of my extended tangents. I know I've been comparing everything to politics recently. I'm going to do it again, but bear with me because I do think it makes sense. So you know how like the buzzword of the election was normalized? Like all these horrific things that we've never thought we had to consider before have now been quote-unquote normalized, and like everybody's got to like wander around with like these thoughts in their heads. I think the Warriors have normalized so many insane things that even like 3 years ago, we never would have thought, you know, the deep Steph threes, the very quick threes in transition, like seeking out the embarrassing plays for the opposition through your insane passing and making people like fall over, you know, with the bang, 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 bang passes.
Yeah.
With the pace, with the offensive efficiency, and with the heavy reliance on three-pointers, these guys have just basically dulled our reality, or like, you know, changed our senses in terms of what we have come to expect as like okay or normal. And I really think that they're going to be ushering in an era as more and more teams kind of copy the Warriors, where our old expectations for like what wouldn't be okay from a sportsmanship perspective, or what would seem like overboard, are going to start to be molded in a different way. And I really think that we could see a situation like 3 years down the road where our first instinct in that moment isn't to like get him out because enough is enough. Like our first instinct will become like kill, 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 kill. Like we need to see like someone just go all out Kobe style, regardless of if it's a close game or not, to try to get 82 or to try to set these records. And like, there's other sports like soccer where that mentality late in games is okay. Like it doesn't matter if you're up 7-1, you keep going for it. I wonder if the Warriors are really going to start to change our perception on like what's running up the score, what's doing too much. Because even look at their celebrations. You know, Steph was basically a chicken with his head cut off, running around the bench, running into the tunnel when Klay hit one of the threes in the first half. You know what I mean?
It's ridiculous. Although the like, Cavs bench wins this week for their water bottle challenge.
Well, and that just proves my point, though. Imagine in a Warriors-free world where the Cavaliers do that. Doesn't LeBron become public enemy number one again? Like, he's disgracing the sport. Like, why is he, like, throwing the water on the ground? He doesn't have any respect for his competition, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying everyone would have that
speaking
feeling.
Speaking of LeBron, though, first of all, no, I don't think LeBron would be. I think LeBron is post-criticism at this point in his career. And one of the things I really enjoy about these Warriors wins is in the second half of these like Warriors blowouts, you'll have Warriors Twitter starts talking like a gang of shit about just everything, every critic, every opposing player. And then inevitably someone takes it a step too far. And like this last time against the Clippers, they were talking about how Draymond can guard literally every power forward in the league. And then like, the easy response is like, not every power forward. I remember one that he couldn't guard. And it's just like, it gets me so excited for the finals all over again.
Okay. But real quick, I do think that the reaction to the water bottle incident would have been different if the Warriors didn't exist, because it's been normalized.
I don't agree.
Well, here, look, I think that the Wizards could come out, have a mannequin challenge on their bench if they actually were winning a game, and no one would bat an eye because the Warriors have been so insane with their bench celebrations. And don't you remember when they were first doing that crazy stuff? The Clippers took so much offense to it. Like, remember when Blake, like, bricked a shot off the side of the backboard and all the Warriors, this is like 3 years ago, all the Warriors were like dying laughing on their bench. And there was like a real conversation about like, oh, were they trying to show Blake up? Was this disrespectful? And all this, now we're 3 years into it, and it's like, unless Steph like brings a hoverboard onto the bench and like runs into JaVale McGee's drone, like it's not going to be a story, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you that the Warriors have warped our perceptions to some extent. I'm not sure I buy into all the claims you're making here, but okay. We had to break our no Warriors talk rule after this absurd week. We will resume gawking at this team like in June, but this was just wild. I have one more question for you. So the Warriors are currently up 7 in Utah, and this is a back-to-back after the Clippers game Wednesday night. Like, if they were gonna lose any game, it would be this one, like in Utah. Granted, George Hill and Rodney Hood aren't playing, but still.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, Utah sat like 5 guys. So they basically punted. So I think the story out of this one's going to be like, wow, like the Jazz, like Joe Ingles, like they really did a valiant effort to try to keep it close. Like the Warriors were, they also
like, I want to know how many games you think they can realistically win, because they're mailing in a lot of games here that they're still winning by 15 or 20.
I mean, the show that I saw Wednesday night against the Clippers, that was a 73 win show. I mean, you know, not really any way
like,
around it.
They're not like last year's Warriors had to grind out 73 wins. And this team could comfortably get to 70 without really exerting itself at all.
Cause I mean, that's the thing about that game. They had a C- offensive effort, you know, like that wasn't even their best work. Like Steph didn't hit a three. KD, that was like his worst shooting game of the entire season if you look at like points per shot
KD,
or whatever.
KD was great defensively though.
For sure. No, they had a strong defensive game. But what I'm saying is like that was like even though they smoked the Clippers, stole the Clippers' soul, and basically like shattered their hopes and dreams for the next 6 months, it could have been a lot worse, I guess was my point.
Yeah.
And that's why that I'm saying it's like a 73-win team because like that's not their ceiling. Like their ceiling is still significantly higher. I mean, their ceiling is the 149 they put on the Lakers, you know, and I think that if things were clicking, they could do that regularly. And that is
it's
a team that,
pretty scary.
Yeah. But at the same time, there little things are happening, right? I mean, Draymond had the ankle. I think he tweaked the ankle in Utah tonight. So, I mean, there are variables here, but
they just have such a vast margin for error compared to anyone else in the league except for the Cavs.
Yeah, and that was like to bring it back real quick, just to like the magazine story I wrote. I mean, that was sort of the question, right? It's like these teams who are chasing the super teams. Their margin of error is much smaller. Like what needs to go right for them to really have a shot? And I think we saw with both the Clippers against the Warriors and also the Raptors against the Cavaliers, you know, if these super teams are locked into any degree, the talent gap is even wider than it was last year. You know, I mean, the rich definitely got richer, and we've seen that in numerous head-to-head showdowns already, and it's not even Christmas yet.
We should have an argument about NBA parity at some point, but we're not going to do it tonight because it's time for the mailbag. And before the mailbag, I want to talk about SeatGeek. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek, and the NBA season is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for the games you want to see up close and in person this season. I swear to you, you can go on SeatGeek right now and probably get like $4 tickets for the Washington Wizards. There is nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year or the Wizards. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for a great value. Ben, do you have any SeatGeek takes?
No, the only take is that it's really, really, really easy. Do you have a cell phone? Yes, you do. Do you have the ability to get an app? Yes, you do. Do you know how to spell the words seat and geek? I hope so. You should if you're listening to this podcast. Type in the word SeatGeek, download the app, and then start searching on the app for whatever tickets you might want. That could be, you know, football, that could be basketball, it could be concerts, could be all sorts of different things. They're going to show you the best prices. It's going to be laid out very simply. You're going to be able to pick from sections and everything you would look for in a ticket buying app, they're going to have it for you. I mean, it's just simple. And also, by the way, I've got a promo code up my sleeve. It's open, OPEN. That promo code will give you $20 off. That's right. If you're listening to me read this right now, I just gave you $20. So go ahead and test it out. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Enjoy our promo code. It's great to be in the SeatGeek game. It's a real stamp of legitimacy for us. Get your $20 rebate now. Download the SeatGeek app. Use it for something other than Wizards tickets.
If you're enjoying this podcast, then check out the Seth Davis podcast.
Tim Brando of Fox Sports told me he actually did not vote Lamar Jackson first on his own ballot.
I will tell you that I didn't vote him number one, but I think Lamar Jackson, because of the influential play and victories, will probably carry the day in terms of his name being on virtually every national ballot.
Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the Seth Davis Podcast wherever you download your shows.
And now it is time to get into the mailbag. It's Thursday night here. I had a conflict, so we had to record this at night.
Hey, real quick, as you're preparing your mailbag, getting the questions all ready to go, because I know we've got a ton of them.
I was just stalling.
Can I throw in a quick plug for you, or for us, for our listeners? I just gave you $20 for SeatGeek. I'm giving you something almost as good as that next week. I did a one-on-one interview with Lee Jenkins. And you know how, Andrew, a lot of times a recurring theme for what you tell our listeners is that, you know, they're probably young adults and we're trying to help them grow up a little bit.
Right.
That was the mentality I took into the interview. It's like, Lee's a legitimate adult. He's like a legitimate A-list writer. This guy is the best in the business, right?
Way too qualified to be on this podcast. Yes.
Really, really, really qualified. And so I went into the interview with the idea of like, let's just pick this guy's brain. So I asked some of my other writer friends, young writers, I said, you know, what do you want to hear from Lee Jenkins? And obviously he had this unbelievable story about LeBron James, the sports person of the year. So we go in depth on that story, everything you could possibly want to know about that, about Lee's coverage of LeBron over the years, about his opinions of LeBron's future, how long is he going to play in the NBA, what does he think about the hype around LeBron's son as a prospect. But we really dig into it deeply. And then after that, Andrew, I got pretty deep with Lee. I asked him about his motivations in life. I asked him about his writing process. I asked him about writing detailed stories in a fact-free reality that we live in. You're laughing.
Did you ask him about the normalized Golden State Warriors?
No, I didn't think that. I actually recorded it before the game on Wednesday. I thought of that normalization thing after I watched the Bulls Clippers get massacred.
Too bad. That'll be a follow-up.
No, but we covered a lot of ground. So everybody should look for that in your normal open floor feed next week. It's really, I'm actually honestly kind of proud of it, which I probably shouldn't say that.
I can't wait to listen to it.
But it should be good. And people will have that and they can really think when they're with their families over the, you know, Hanukkah and the Christmas break. I mean, they can really reflect on what's important. And that's Lee's writing and his influence on us.
Great.
So check that out.
All right.
On to the mailbag.
We have mailbag questions. Let's just kick it off. Let's go rapid fire here. Nolan Wolfs. Do you guys think the Clippers or Cavs are better suited to beat the Warriors in a 7-game series? I think this was clearly asked before Wednesday night, but I honestly think that the Clippers will, this is a hot take. I think the Clippers will push the Warriors further than the Cavs will.
No. Andrew.
I think they might.
Don't say that. Well, you're going to have to defend that one.
Well, no. Look, if you're a Clippers fan and you actually care about them winning in May, isn't Wednesday night like the ideal scenario for you? Like, I would rather them not look like a threat at all right now. I mean, look, last year the Cavs got their asses kicked in January. I think it was, they lost by like 30 or 40 to the Warriors at home, and I mean, that clearly didn't have much bearing on the playoffs. So I would say, as a wake up call, that like, yo, we need to trade for a small forward. That like, so Wednesday night was probably pretty healthy for the Clips.
I mean, unless they're gonna hire David Blatt just to fire David Blatt and hope they can get that bump. I don't know if I see the comparison. No,
that's fair.
I agreed with the first part of what you said though, because you know my like. Right now, like my wrists are all caked in dirt and my knees are all muddy because I did just kind of bury the Clippers. Like I'm out in my backyard and it's nasty weather and I buried their championship dreams, you know, in the first 15 minutes of this podcast. So your point's well taken. I mean, it removed any talk about rivalry or, oh, this Clippers team is different than the previous ones against the Warriors. My big concern, though, is just kind of watching how shell-shocked they were, whether that would have actually been preferable.
That's another factor. I don't think it's possible for Blake Griffin to be more shell-shocked than he was on Wednesday night. I also don't think it's possible for DeAndre Jordan to be as irrelevant as he was in that game. So, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I also don't think there's anyone else in the West who can contend at this point. Like, the Spurs have kind of come back to earth a little bit here. But we've talked too much about the Clippers and Warriors, and we'll talk plenty about the Cavs and Warriors. Let's talk about the Denver Nuggets, Ben.
Oh, wow. That's left field. Let me just say for Nolan, though, I think the Cavs are going to put up a tougher fight. Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Nuggets.
Max Siegel asks, is Jamal Murray the second coming of Gilbert Arenas? Parentheses, in a good way. Tyler Long asks, is Denver going to make the trade they need in order to take a step up? And let me just start by saying Denver really needs to make a trade. This is like, I understand they want value, but like they need to clear some of those guys out. Kenneth Faried got a DNP tonight. That's not helping his trade value.
Perfect.
And they just, like, the whole roster, like, lacks any semblance of cohesion.
I mean, I really kind of feel like these questions were just to tee me up to flip out on the Nuggets again, because that's a pretty regular occurrence for me. I think outside of their coach, Michael Malone, who's proven to be fairly competent over the course of his career and well-liked by the players, I pretty much just don't like their whole show. Like, I kind of feel like Suge Knight just ripping apart Bad Boy Entertainment up on the stage, you know? I don't really think anything they've got going, whether it's the fan support, the ownership's commitment, the way the pieces fit together on the roster, the vision in terms of, you know, are the young guys going to have the proper support from veterans at the right spots? I mean, just none of it makes sense to me. I am on board with Jamal Murray, and I was very intrigued by him really since the first time I saw him, which I think was at the Hoop Summit, and then going through to Summer League and what he's shown so far. I mean, he's definitely in the Rookie of the Year conversation. I came into this season basically saying it's all going to come down to whether this season is going to come down to whether Moutier makes the leap. Well, Moutier is tripping over his own feet. That's not happening. And Gary Harris has been injured. So to me, I don't know. They obviously need to make multiple trades to clear out some of these older guys. I'm not even that worried about the value. But I think that their GM's kind of in a situation where he doesn't think he can sign anybody. I mean, this is a guy who was throwing around big change for J.J. Hickson. Everybody in the league knew J.J. Hickson was terrible when he gave him that money, and now J.J. Hickson's in China. So I don't know. I think he hangs on to some of these veterans because he's worried he can't replace them.
Yeah, I like Tim Connelly. I met him in Vegas, and I've long been like a admirer of the Nuggets, at least for the last 18 months. And I started complimenting his team, and he was like, well, look, we got to start winning because like everybody loves our draft picks. Everybody loves our young guys.
Wait, well, why do you like his team though? I mean, like, is it just the funny names and like where they're from around the, you know, they obviously have a real emphasis on international scouting, but what is there to like?
Yes, it is sort of that. But okay. I mean, I'll cop to that. okay. But at the same time, I really like a lot of their prospects. They just need to clear them out. And my overriding Nuggets theory is that, like, you know how the way we talked about the Magic and Vucevic, and it wasn't necessarily you and I 2 years ago, but like I've never thought that Vucevic was a fit in Orlando, and for some reason they always have, and relying on him basically like screwed up their team for 2.5 years to the point where then they traded for help, and they just would have been better off getting rid of him 3 years ago. And that's where Denver is with Moutier right now, is they think he's the guy for some reason, and they would just be better off if they saw him maybe as like a future backup or something, but like he's not the guy. They're currently, they look much better with Jameer Nelson playing 30 minutes a game. And so I think step one in terms of making a trade or making a change is like for that front office to realize that Moutier isn't the answer.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why they drafted Murray, you know? I mean, they might have had an oh crap moment during his rookie season where, you know, it obviously he was one of the worst players in the NBA as a rookie, and he hasn't made a huge jump. I think he's been a little bit closer to respectable, but still not quite there. And, you know, when you draft a guy like Murray, like right off the bat, and Murray's a shooter and Murray plays the way everybody wants modern guards to play. He's got the confidence. He's got the handle. He's comfortable on the ball. He can step back and shoot off the dribble. He's completely committed to the sport. I mean, his dad like brainwashed him into playing basketball.
Yeah.
So that could be a really quick transition of power. I mean, that could happen not too long, you know?
I think the Nuggets would be better off if they chose Jamal Murray over Emmanuel Moutier, and then they got to see what the deal is with Jokic. Like he hasn't really been healthy this year, and so I wouldn't go and trade Yusuf Nurkic right now. But like long term, I think you got to choose Jokic over Nurkic. And
I'm glad you.
And then beyond that. I mean, I love Nurkic somewhere else. Don't get me wrong. But beyond that, they still have a lot of flexibility. They have a high lottery pick this year. Plus, I believe they'll get a pick from the Grizzlies, which could be, who knows where that'll be. But But they're in a good spot, and I like Malik Beasley a little bit. I liked him coming into to the NBA. They've got a lot of Hernan Gomez is going to be good. Like, all I'm saying is that you are being a little bit too hard on the Nuggets, and yeah, we should probably move on before we alienate too many listeners. But
okay, let me just say this though: is like, people have been really patient with the Nuggets for a long time. They've sucked for a while. And that's the reason why, if you're a local Nuggets fan,
like 3 years
since Melo left, really. I mean, pretty much. Maybe like the last four
seasons.
They were
good. That's way too extreme. They were good with Ty Lawson and Iguodala and George Karl. That was what, 4 or 5 years ago?
You're right.
I mean, like, the Wizards have sucked for like 40 years. So,
okay, good point. They haven't been as bad for as long as the Wizards, although the Wizards did make it almost to the conference finals more recently.
That's right.
I'm looking this up right now because I do think this is an important point. So they are headed for their fourth straight lottery trip. They won 36, 30, and 33. And keep in mind, like, most of those seasons, they were trying to win. Like, even though they were young, like, they're not in that tank mode.
That's a
fair
point. Yeah.
And here's another problem, and I really don't want to pick on these guys too much, but I want to say that Michael Malone, like, presented Tim Connelly with a basketball for, like, his 100th victory or whatever. As GM, if I'm not mistaken, this happened recently. And then he was like, well, it did take us 4 years, but like, congratulations. And it's like, oh, you know, 100 wins over 4 years. Like, that's basically like 14 months for the Warriors.
Yeah. Well, look, I am not giving up on the Nuggets, but I watched a full Nuggets game, Nuggets Sixers the other night. And it was just like, that's 2.5 hours of my life that I'm never going to get back. Because the Sixers were a disaster and the Nuggets were really not much better. So
I used to think that I watched a lot of games just to like make my eyes bleed just out of like pure self-torture. You might give me a run for my money on that, man.
I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know what happened. Next question. Lance Rodeo, is Isaiah Austin eligible for the 2017 draft? So it is my understanding that he is not. But I like this question because you can tell how desperate a fan base is by how quickly they started to ask about Isaiah Austin. And for me, I was texting Wizards fans the day it was announced that he was able to play basketball again. So, yes, I'm very desperate and very interested into what Isaiah's next move is. It's cool that he's going to be able to play.
For sure. It's really cool. Just to be clear on the draft stuff, I mean, he has no reason to want to go back into the draft because he's an unrestricted free agent, so he can sign with total freedom at this point. Basically, go ahead and start sending your tweets to your team's GM or sending in your messages of support.
Tweet him directly, man.
Yeah, maybe start up a campaign online, you know, raise money, whatever it might be to get your team to go after him. He's available.
Mason Daly asks, has there been a team you get attached to when your team is awful? For me, it was the Grizz post Celtics big three. Do you have an answer?
Well, I'm coming at it from a slightly different perspective because I don't necessarily say I've got one team. I do get fatigued watching some teams over and over again too much. So I do try to like carve out a couple of teams like that will be a sort of my break teams. You know, when I need a little bit more balance in my life, in terms of, those teams, who are they this year? That's tough. I mean, honestly, for like completely different reasons, both the Lakers and Kings have been in that group. It's just like, I got
right.
Kind of like the train wrecks and I kind of like the young, just like crazy squads. But no, there's not really one that kind of fits his category that he's describing. How about you?
Well, so first of all, I am desperately in need of one, because Jason Smith and Marcus Thornton are making my eyes bleed in DC. I haven't really settled on like a clear last year. I really adopted the Blazers and, got pretty into them. I was into the Wolves coming into this year, but watching Wolves games is a pretty frustrating experience because it's really hard to figure out exactly what doesn't work. But it's clear that there are several potential answers there. I do want to talk about the Grizzlies, though.
This is your answer.
Look, Andrew Harrison, Tony Allen, Troy Daniels, Troy Williams, Marcus Gasol. Those are the kings of the NBA right now. Fuck the Warriors.
Okay, so hold on 1 second. Can I just read you one of my tweets in hopes of blowing your mind?
Yes.
The Memphis Grizzlies.
Is it a Golliver
stat? It's a Golliver stat. The Memphis Grizzlies in games that were within 3 points either way in the final minute this year are now 12-0 after coming back against the Blazers on Thursday night and really embarrassing the Blazers late in that game. Almost to the point of Clippers like humiliation. 12-0 in games decided by 3 points or less in the final minute. That is ridiculous. If you go to Vegas with those odds and that kind of a situation, you're walking out with $100 million in your pocket. If you go 12-0, I mean, that's like getting red or black 12 times in a row. Forget about it.
I mean, look, they haven't exactly played a murderer's row post Conley, but they're 5-1, which is shocking to me. They beat the Magic. They beat the Lakers. The Pelicans in double OT was a pretty impressive win. Yeah, they really have not played a murderer's row. They beat the Sixers and the Blazers. Look, I am pumped for the Grizzlies. They're in good shape. They might actually be able to survive. They've got the Warriors and then two games against the Cavs coming up. So 5-3 post Conley, or 5-4, if you pencil in those losses, like that's still pretty solid.
No, it's ridiculous. And like it was either Tony Douglas or Sherman Douglas put the Blazers away late by taking Damian Lillard off the dribble to get a foul. I mean, come on. Like they're pulling people out of nowhere.
Was Tony Douglas even in America last week? I don't think he was the guy they brought in from China. I'm going to look this up. But yeah, they've been fantastic. Like Marcus Gasol has been out of his mind.
Yeah. That was another thought I had on the Grizzlies just real quick. He is the first team All-NBA center. I know a lot of people are out there, right? At least right now. A lot of people are floating different cases. Oh, it's DeAndre Jordan. Oh, it's DeMarcus Cousins. Oh, throw Anthony Davis into that mix. I mean, if we're talking pure centers right now, biggest impact through the first quarter of the season, the answer is Marcus Gasol, and it's not close.
Yeah. No, he's been great. The Grizzlies are great. So, however, to answer Mason's question, I'm not totally sure I'm ready to like go all in on that bandwagon yet because, you know, if we're being honest, there still might be some tough nights ahead for the Grizz.
Well,
but
I think your other team is the Bucks. You watch a lot of Bucks.
Oh, my God. Yes. Good call. The Bucks.
Yeah.
Especially now that John Henson has emerged as like a real threat. I could never figure out why he wasn't more effective the last few years, but he's been awesome. Jabari and Giannis. Giannis deserves more than like a throwaway line on our pod. But yeah, what?
I think it's the Thunder, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I wasn't necessarily super like gung-ho about the Russell Westbrook by himself experience coming into the season. You know, I was very careful to kind of say, like, hey, there's going to be some issues. But I'm sucked in. I mean, it's super watchable. There's really no doubt about that. And it's also very unpredictable. Like you don't kind of know what's going to happen on a night-to-night basis. And he's going to turn in a ridiculous effort one way or the other, but like who else is going to show up? And so from that standpoint, they're kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, no, they have been surprised. And you know, so we talked about last week, we talked about Hinkie and the idea that like the opening... The idea that like the first couple games shape our understanding of a player, and or you said that, and it's really true with Oladipo. Oladipo was a disaster through like the first 10 games or the first 10 days, and since then he's actually like put together some really solid numbers.
Yeah, for the season he's at 17, 4.5, and 3. Like you're saying, 46% from the field, 39% from three. He's sliding into that role that they sort of crafted for him, and I think he's making a pretty compelling case that he's a keeper, which was a question that we had kind of coming into the season. And, you know, I think he's one of these guys who we've got to consider, you know, whether it's most improved, I'm not sure he's going to quite fit that mix given there's some other candidates out there. But I know we also got a question from somebody that came into my Twitter DMs that was sort of like, who are some of these guys that have shaken off slow starts? And he had mentioned, I think, like Evan Turner maybe, or who are some people that we thought might shake off their slow starts? And I think that Oladipo, like you're saying, is a perfect answer to that question.
He's become solid.
Really functional. Yeah.
So another question, Vincent Halley, are you going for a specific color scheme or do you just get all of the deli ones? Serious answer. I have not really looked into the deli ones, but I did seriously look into the Klay Thompson, the Antas.
And
I think I'm going to, I will probably purchase those this weekend, with the yellow colorway. Although that it's really hard to pull that color scheme off as like an adult, but I'm probably going to sink in $150 anyways.
Go for it. Everybody's caught up. Like all the crazy like highlighter colors, that was a big fad that started with high school boys and ended up with like middle-aged moms. A couple of years to get there, but no, you can wear whatever color shoes you want these days. And let me just put it out there. I mean, I have some experience here with these Jordan brand events, you know, these Adidas events, you know, Airedeli, like if you're throwing a party, whether it's Melbourne or Sydney and you need somebody to provide some color, you know, let me know.
Seriously, get at both of us. I would love to go to Australia with you for a deli shoe party. Doug Weikstra asks, does the NBA have more starting caliber fives or starting caliber ones?
Yeah, there's been a real push about the whole centers thing this year. I would still lean ones, but it's getting closer. The thing with the fives though, is there's so many different flavors of them, right? And only a few of them actually wind up being that helpful when push comes to shove. Like a great example of this is Jonas Valanciunas, who the Raptors fans now want to trade because of the 0-3 start to Cleveland, because he just can't even stay on the court late in games. He is a starting quality five, no question about it. He does some things really, really well, but he doesn't help you late in playoff games with the game on the line. I mean, you need a very certain type of player. And a lot of the guys who fit that mold, I mean, there's a lot of guys in that same Valanciunas mold to me. So I'd still lean ones. How about you?
I think you are spiritually correct. I think technically it's correct to say that there are more starting caliber fives, because like you look around at teams like teams that would theoretically want to trade a big man, and there just aren't really any options because most teams are set and don't want another big man. So there are a lot of starting caliber fives, but as you point out, most of them kind of suck, whereas there are a lot of stars at point guard. It is going to be really interesting watching what the league starts to look like when it belongs to Porzingis, Embiid, Anthony Davis, Towns, because that generation is like the point guard generation that we have now.
Hey, one other name to throw into that mix that you just mentioned is Miles Turner, and I know we've maybe not argued, but we've had a little difference of opinion about him previously. Let me just plug Rob Mahoney's piece on him called The Craft about Miles Turner. It is a great look into how you build a guy for the future, like with the future in mind, because I think the Pacers very clearly understand that they've got a significant talent in him, right? And they're trying to find the best ways to use him. And Rob does a great deep dive into the skills that Miles Turner is trying to learn, how they're trying to kind of progress things for him in pick and roll situations as his body develops, how they're trying to steer him towards better screen setting techniques, and how he's trying to learn better chemistry with all of the kind of rotating cast of ball handlers around him. It's just a fascinating piece. And so when we're looking ahead, like where is the league going to go? I mean, that's the front line of that conversation. Rob did a nice job on it.
Good plug. And you're right. Miles Turner, my curiosity with him is whether he can stay healthy. If he could stay healthy, he is 100% in that conversation. So, it's going to be weird to watch. Like Drummond is in that mix too. Like these guys are lurking, but I'm not sure what it'll look like. Alex Kaufman asks, will you ever sell your house on Waiters Island? Dude's putting up solid counting stats, but bad shooting. So for the record, Waiters Island started at Grantland. That was my buddy Chris Ryan was more like the ambassador of Waiters Island. I always sort of respect him, but keep him at arm's length. I am among the Heat. I'm far more into my man Wayne Ellington is starting to get some minutes for them and putting up numbers. And
random
I really
Carolina
like
shout
just.
Out.
Yeah, it's look, any Tar Heel around the league, I will rep. And Justice Winslow, I'm more interested in, but he's been out for like a month now. So, yeah, the Heat are pretty bleak.
The Heat are very bleak. And in terms of, you know, Waiters Island, climate change is coming for it. It's going to be underwater here very quickly. I revoked all passports to Waiters Island as soon as he got traded to Oklahoma City. You know what's actually, this is a random Waiters memory, but I was at a game in Portland early in LeBron's first season for the Cavaliers, and LeBron did kind of the checkout pout thing where Waiters was over dribbling and taking dumb shots, and so was Kyrie. And so LeBron was basically like, okay, screw it, guys. You can go ahead and play the way you want. They had a terrible team performance. I completely ripped LeBron after the game in my post-game call. I'm just basically saying like, look, dude, you can't lead like this. It's never going to work this way. In reality, the right angle from that column should have been, how quickly are they going to be trading Dion Waiters? Like, how fast can they get him out of town? And sure enough, he was gone pretty quickly. And, you know, the Cavaliers made the finals and then they won the title the next year. So things worked out very well for them.
The halcyon days of Dion and Kyrie as the best backcourt in the East lasted a solid 6 weeks together before things fell apart. So do you have these questions in front of you? What should we pick?
I do have the questions here. Well, your favorite topic involving Sixers trade. Somebody, Matt Vo, actually asked, the Suns have too many guards. The Sixers have too many bigs. Should they do a trade? Maybe like a Brandon Knight for a Nerlens Noel. So we have actually mentioned both these teams before in trade scenarios. Maybe not together, though.
Yeah.
What do you think of his proposal?
I heard that Jerry Colangelo called last year and tried to trade Jahlil Okafor for Devin Booker. Shocker, that did not work out. The other thing I would add is, I might have also wanted Alex Len. The other thing I would add is that the Suns have too many big men also and would not want any of the 76ers big men. The Suns just have too many players right now.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about the Suns big men is like they could just lose all of them. You know, they could like go to like a, you know, a Black Friday sale and just a few of them don't come out of Best Buy and it wouldn't really matter. I mean, some of these guys like Len and Tyson Chandler, like those are pretty expendable. Like you're not really tied to them that much type pieces.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
So what do you think Alex Len gets paid this summer?
Oh, man. Well, I am a big time doubter in his game. I think a comp to look at for him in terms of sort of like just, this is going to sound harsh, but like general uselessness would be Myers Leonard.
Definitely sounded harsh.
So I think like if he makes more like than a scaled version of Myers Leonard based on the new cap number, I think that would be a pretty big loss.
Yeah. I just feel like, so this summer was sort of like, we were in uncharted territory and a lot of people spent a lot of money and everyone was kind of just like, well, this is what it costs now. This is like the price of doing business. I think that people like Alex Len are going to be victim of the regret that is sweeping the league after like $70 million for Kent Bazemore, like $80 million for Ryan Anderson. There's just like a lot of wild deals that are tough. It's tough to build around when you've sunk that much money into guys. So had you asked me 6 months ago, I would have said some team is going to pay way too much money for Alex Len, but now I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Well, the answer usually becomes we always get back to some team screws up and pays too much money eventually. But I like that we're in this little interregnum where it seems like maybe they won't, because that's a nicer place to be. Yeah. We have a question from Chris Chavez here. He says, would you rather let LeBron James throw a basketball at your face for $10 million or let a regular person do the same for $10,000? That seems like a really obvious question or answer, doesn't it?
Well,
I actually have some unique insight on this.
All right, give me your answer.
Okay, so when I was in college, I took a pie of Cheese Whiz to the face, like as part of a, I don't know exactly what it was. It was just some nonsense, right? But let me just say that the person who threw the pie of Cheese Whiz threw it way too hard. So like the pie pan part, like basically, I thought after it happened, I thought my nose was
broken.
Were
you bleeding through your Cheese Whiz?
No, I wasn't, but I honestly thought for sure my nose was broken, and it took me like a solid 3 hours of like taking the Cheese Whiz out of my nostrils to be convinced that everything was okay and I was cool. Like it was to the point where like my eyes were like gushing water. It's like if you have like a really hot pepper or whatever, like you're just, your body just gets overwhelmed. So that's what it was. So
glory days.
It was absolutely horrible. And I guess what my point is with this is that it's going to suck either way if a regular person throws it for 10,000 or if LeBron throws it for 10 million. Like there's a decent chance you're going to have a broken nose, you're going to have like puffy eyes. You're probably not going to die. Like it would be really unlikely for you to die. So I would take the LeBron for 10 million and just, you know, reinvest some of that money into whatever medical plastic surgery you're going to need. But I just don't think there's an easy way out here. That was the point of my story. Like, it's really going to suck either way.
Well, it's not going to suck that much. I mean, I would let anyone throw a ball at my face for $10,000. I'd be fine with that. LeBron, it's not as obvious as you think. Like, if he breaks your orbital bone, like, that is rough. But I think the tiebreaker for me is that $10 million... would be nice. But I also think you'd have like ancillary revenue and fame that you could parlay from this experience that would definitely make it worth it.
But just look at it this way. Let's say worst case scenario, you die. LeBron throws the ball, hits you in the face, and you die. Your $10 million now is being handed off to your wife and whatever, you know, children or other family members that you have. Like that's now like your estate. And, you know, the estate tax thing, I mean, that's coming up. So you'd probably want to delay this for as long as possible so they can get this estate tax changes in. But don't you think it would be a worthwhile, like, lifetime gesture to your future generations of sharps to just take the $10 million and run here?
I don't think so. I don't think my wife would approve of that deal. That's a good point. And we'll wait until the estate tax and then figure it out just to be safe.
Do you remember Montreal Marcos?
Oh, yeah. He's a longtime listener.
Montreal Marcos, he emailed in and he said, I've been sitting around my apartment for the last week and a half waiting for DeMar DeRozan to register his second block of the season. And even though he plays well over 30 minutes per night, I still haven't seen it. Is it usual for a star guard who considers himself to be snubbed by Sports Illustrated so severely that he continues to bring it up in interviews to this day to not register more than one block in the first 800 minutes of playing time during the 2016-17 season? That really seems to me like a very neglectful defender who's not doing his job as a helper. And he's not doing his job in one-on-one scenarios.
Oh my God.
When it comes time to closing out on jump shooters. Man, I keep telling you, Andrew, I am blown away by the knowledge that our listeners have in terms of their basketball IQ and the questions that they ask. And I mean, Montreal Marcos, you did it again. No explanation for how he only has one block shot in almost 800 minutes of action. It defies logic. You look at some of these other guys who are in this conversation. Usually you're getting at least a block every 100 minutes if you're, you know, a big time guard and one every 50 minutes if you're maybe a small forward. And the fact that he's only got one 800 minutes, I mean, that is, that's really, really questionable.
That's a killer obscure block stat burn from Montreal Marcos. Great
work.
I don't think Marcos
was necessarily trying to burn him. I think he's just a concerned Raptors fan who understands what winning just, basketball is.
Got it. All right. Two more questions here. The Carthaginian asks, which game this season has been most reminiscent of the Battle of Agincourt? So I'm probably, I might be pronouncing that wrong. And I'm embarrassed that my knowledge of both Shakespeare and English history is not great. But the Battle of Agincourt was a major English victory in the Hundred Years' War. The battle took place on Friday, October 25th of 1415, St. Crispin's Day.
Wikipedia voice.
Yeah, this is great. And it was in northern France. Henry V's victory at Agincourt against the numerically superior French army crippled France and started a new period in the war during which Henry V married the French king's daughter, and their son, later Henry VI of England and Henry VI of France, was made heir to the throne in both countries. This battle is notable for the use of the English longbow in very large numbers, with English and Welsh archers forming most of Henry's army. So, Ben, do you have an answer for this?
Well, there's a couple of key details. I mean, first of all, Henry V is sort of, I think in modern parlance, wouldn't we say he's a Captain Steal Your Girl if he's going yes. and taking the French king's daughter? And then the issue of the longbow and the use of that in large numbers, I mean, that really kind of leans me towards a team that maybe is shooting a lot from the outside. The fact
so
that
there's really only one answer, and unfortunately it was not a game this season, but like you can't pick anything but Warriors Thunder in last year's playoffs.
Oh, I like it, because they were down, so that makes the Thunder the French, who were the numerically superior team, up 3-2.
Exactly. 3-1.
Up 3-1? Yes, up
3-1. Yeah, they were up 3-1, and then the English longbow and Clay Thompson helped conquer the army, and then they married the French king's daughter, which is Kevin Durant.
So they swagger drag Kevin Durant, Mr. Steal Your Girl. Yeah, I think that fits. I mean, the Carthaginian who sent this in, first of all, that sounds like carcinogen, which would be a very different question. They'd be asking us to compare which game is sort of like Marlboro Reds. But yeah, I think we've got it. I think you nailed it.
Yes. Perfect. Yes. If anyone is still listening at this point, thank you. And I spent about 20 minutes thinking of an answer to that question about a week ago.
I feel like that guy's now like, going to let us, now that you cracked that code, he's going to let us like through the wardrobe to like whatever the next challenge is.
Yeah, exactly. please hit us with a follow-up, Carthaginian. That was a great activity at like 3 a.m. Anyways, well, final question. Muse asks, would you rather play with D'Angelo Russell would you rather play with D'Angelo Russell or for Tom Thibodeau, just in terms of how annoying it would be?
I'm going for Tibbs. I can handle a little screaming.
Really?
I'm a pretty intense person.
You and Tibbs seem like you'd be on the same page.
Yeah. And like, just like, even just how Jimmy Butler kind of got along with them. And there's certain personality types that seem to mesh with Tibbs, you know, and kind of make it work. I feel like maybe, I don't want to like give myself too much credit, but I feel like I'm kind of in that same like personality district where it would kind of work. With Russell, I just think I'd have a really hard time getting over some of the antics. And like the fun factor, it like wouldn't be worth it. And I'd just constantly be worried like, okay, he's got the Jenner sitting courtside. Like, you know, he's got the Snapchat. It would be too much stress.
Yeah, it's tough. D'Angelo would make me feel like really old and out of touch and
you are
frustrated. And, like, no, because I'm not old enough to like accept that. So when confronted, I get frustrated. So that would be tough. And this, by the same token, though, Tibbs, like, I'm just not willing to grind myself into the ground the way you are, and I don't think I could handle it. And if you look at the Wolves don't seem very happy. I think that's the biggest issue in Minnesota, is that they just don't look like they're having fun playing basketball. And so, and you look at the Lakers do look like they're having fun. So if I were playing with D'Angelo Russell, that also means I'd be spending a lot of time with Luke Walton, so I'm gonna go with D'Angelo.
Yeah. I think you actually had a saner answer than I did, so congratulations on that one.
Well, your unhealthiness would fit in great with Tibbs. It'd be perfect. You guys could both chug Red Bull all day and just make it work.
And just look constipated constantly. Yeah, that could work.
Yeah, that's great. We'll end on that note, you know?
Oh, perfect.
So we will be back next week. I'm very excited about a project that we have for Monday. And, you know, until then, just enjoy it. Go Grizzlies.
No, hold on. You forgot the most important part. SeatGeek promo code open. $20 off.
That's right.
Get yourself hooked up.
50 cents Wizard tickets.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.